Hello, I'm Saoirse Pollock, and this is In the News from the Irish Times. Today, we take a step into the future and look at what life in Ireland could be like by 2050 if we continue to ignore the warning signs of the climate crisis. It's August 2050, and I'm walking through Dublin city centre. It's hot and sticky, and there's smoke lingering in the air from those gorse fires in the Dublin mountains. When I was younger, I longed for warmer weather in Ireland. But these days, summer in the capital is hot and suffocating. I often dream of waking up to frost on the window panes and stepping outside into a cold, icy morning. But that's a thing of the past. We haven't had frost in Ireland for years. I see a large crowd outside a government building. New climate refugees, of course. They're coming from Africa, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, but the influx of Irish Australians returning home, that's also soaring. Wildfires, lack of fresh water, and dangerously high temperatures have just become too much for them. Looking back now, I wonder why we didn't heed all those warnings until it was just too late. On October 31st, world leaders will gather in Glasgow for the UN Climate Change Conference, or COP26, to discuss solutions to the climate disaster we are now all facing. Between now and then, we're covering the climate crisis on this podcast every week. But if all leaders at COP26 do not agree on how to reduce emissions and commit to concrete and urgent action, we're facing into a very bleak future. And what does all this mean for a small, rainy country like Ireland? And what might our lives on this island look like in 30 years if we fail to act now? Dr. Alistair McKinstry and Dr. Ender O'Brien are climate scientists at the Irish Centre for High-End Computing, where they carry out detailed modelling on what the climate in Ireland will look like in the coming decades. And Ireland's climate, as we all well know, is characteristically windy and very damp. That's what we're used to in this country. But because of the effects of global warming, we know that will change into the future. To what extent are these changes already happening?
The change is small. Since it is small, it's difficult to attribute any particular event to climate change. You know, we've always had extreme weather events in Ireland. You know, one that comes to mind is even 2 centuries ago would be that so-called big wind that happened, I think it was in 1839 or so.
By all accounts, the storm lasted for 3 days and described by the Dublin Evening Mail then as being of tempestuous power. It started in the southeast, veered to the west and then north, tearing up trees along its path and lifting roofs off the houses in towns and cities right across the country.
In a way, that was a regular old winter storm, just exceptionally low pressure with exceptionally strong winds, did exceptionally lot of damage, killed a lot of people. And I don't think anything like that has been recorded since. But that all happened before people started burning fossil fuel. So that kind of event was possible. And so when we have extreme events now, a bit of a trick to attribute them specifically as a result of climate change. But there are some fingerprints you would look for. For instance, earlier this summer, we had for the first time ever, I think it was a code orange warning from Met Aaron that the nighttime temperature would not fall below 20 Celsius.
The hottest day of the year was last Saturday, where 29.5 degrees was recorded in Athenry in Galway. A status orange high temperature warning has been issued covering 6 counties. Met Aaron is warning of temperatures exceeding 30 degrees Celsius in these places, and overnight temperatures dropping no lower than 20 degrees. A separate
in the 20th century records I've been looking at, I don't think the surface temperature at nighttime was ever above 20 Celsius, but it did happen this past summer. And the particular warming at night is one of the fingerprints you would expect to see happening under the climate change due to a lot of carbon dioxide concentrations going up.
Alistair, on the weather events, you mentioned the storm 200 years ago, but then you have something like Storm Ophelia a couple of years back, which was something, I mean, in my lifetime, it really stood out as a particularly large weather event. I mean, would that be indicative of changes that are happening in our climate here in Ireland?
It could be. Attribution becomes difficult depending on the type of event. So it becomes easy to identify temperature events, but much harder to do storm events. we can basically run our climate models many times to see how frequently we would have observed something like storm Ophelia without climate change and then with climate change. And this is sometimes useful, mostly as an academic exercise, but you know, you will end up with a percentage chance that this is more likely to have happened under climate change. And the challenge is trying to explain why you spent so much money and so much effort doing getting exactly that number. You do it occasionally. You do it to prove that the science is right, but you're reluctant to do it for every passing storm.
And when you, Alistair, look at predictions for 2050 that include a rise in temperatures similar to what we saw this summer and more frequent heat waves, you might be tempted to think here in Ireland, well, if that's climate change here, maybe it's not all that bad. Is that a very naive way of looking at these changes?
I think we're particularly lucky in Ireland. We'll see relatively little climate change because we're embedded in the ocean and the change is relatively small. It isn't all bad. We will have, in the second half of the century, 30 to 40 days more growing season in Ireland. So that can change. We need to take advantage of that. But other people will lose, and we need to be aware of the fact that, in a sense, we have been relatively climate lucky. Overall, globally, most people are far worse off than better off when we add up the total picture.
And another prediction for 2050 is that we are going to see more of those big storms and more frequently. I mean, why is that, and how dangerous could they become?
Certainly, the predictions are for stronger tropical cyclones or hurricanes, if you like. And that's because the sea surface temperature will be warmer and it will be warmer over a bigger area. So those tropical cyclones exist to transport heat from the warm sea surface higher up into the atmosphere. And, you know, in a warmer world, they will be stronger, all right, and more frequent. But here in the mid-latitudes, I expect we will see actually fewer and weaker winter storms, the kind of storms that Metairn might name, you know, over the winter season. And it's quite easy to explain why that might be. It's because if the Arctic is warming faster than lower latitudes, the temperature gradient between the mid-latitudes and the Arctic is smaller. And these mid-latitude winter storms that we typically get, they feed off of that temperature gradient. And so if that temperature gradient is smaller, those storms are going to be weaker. So that's the theory, if you like. We shouldn't expect stronger winter storms. Okay, there still will be winter storms, but no stronger than we've had, than we're used to. Storms will still happen. In a warmer world, they will carry more moisture.
What about, you mentioned the moisture in those storms. I mean, flooding is a problem in many parts of this country. Cork City immediately comes to mind.
Minutes after high tide, several of the city's streets were turned into rivers. Water flowed from Father Matthew Keane Morrison's.
What does it mean for flooding defences? And also the reality that we are an island, so we are surrounded by water. So with sea levels undisputably rising, what does that mean?
That's probably the biggest change that we'll spot by 2050. We will see wetter winters, drier summers, typically rising by about 7 or 8% more rainfall for every degree of warming. That will mostly be in the form of bigger, heavier, wetter events. So the flooding is in the short term the most important thing to take care of. Sea level rise is a challenging problem to deal with because of its variable and long time scales. So it's rising by about 3 millimeters a year on average at the moment, which doesn't sound like a lot. But we're probably looking at around a meter of sea level rise by 2100 in the main scenarios. I know Environment England are giving advice to prepare against 2.5 meters of sea level rise, because there's a lot of risk in events we're not sure of in ice sheet melt. And that then becomes very problematic for planning. You know, a 1 meter wall, sea wall is ugly. A 2.5 meter sea wall along the promenade is a different matter entirely.
We've chatted about storms, about heat, about water. Is there anything else that I'm missing? Anything else that is going to pose a risk to Ireland in the future when it comes to climate changes?
Well, I would say the biggest short-term risk is going to be summertime droughts. Because even now, 15 dry days is considered a drought in Ireland. And, you know, by world standards, that's not very long, really. Even as things stand, we don't have very much resilience to a few dry days. We're just so used to the wet. There's a risk that that resilience won't be there when these summer dry periods get a bit longer, which they are projected to get. It's kind of interesting to see how the the rainfall projections. Look, we are projected to get a lot more dry days, and they'll be especially in the summer, and also a lot more wet days. So it'll be kind of the middling days that will be fewer, the middling wet days, if you like, that will be reduced. The fact that there is longer dry spells is going to be a challenge and a risk, especially for water management. But it's just an engineering problem, as far as I can see, so it's nothing to get, you know, too worked up about. Although it's been an engineering problem ever since Ireland became independent, I guess. So maybe it's time to solve it now.
Coming up, perhaps we can cope with a rainier, warmer Ireland into the future, but what will happen in the rest of the world? So we are hearing all these warnings, and we're also seeing internationally there are significant increases in extreme weather events worldwide. But it's still difficult sometimes to imagine what the weather on this small island will be like 30 years from now. I know neither of you have a crystal ball, but could you try painting a picture of what you think Ireland could look like if the climate crisis is left completely unchecked now?
Okay, recall our climate simulations, projections. So they're not forecasts. We're not saying exactly one particular path will happen. They depend on exactly what we do. Our main two projections would be around either side of what we think is feasible, the kind of the Paris Accord. What happens if politicians do things dramatically well? What happens if they don't? Probably what we call RCP 8.5 is possibly closest to business as usual. If we were doing that, we were looking about 3 to 4 degrees of warming by the end of the century, about 3 degrees for Ireland. I think we're talking about times 10 increase in the number of heat waves by 2070, 10-15% increase in the amount of wet days in that period. So those are the kind of main things. I think one of the things that you'd probably notice most would be the disappearance of frost, almost completely lost frost days. And that will probably be significant in terms of insects surviving through the winter. We might have mosquitoes that would survive through the climate. Indeed, one of the biggest unknowns, I think, would be not so much the climate, but what happens with the climate, biology. We can see invasive species that react with a tenth of a degree of change. And we don't really understand how those species will change with temperature well.
What kind of consequences will these changes have for our economy, do you think, and the way we humans live our daily lives here in Ireland?
And here you've got a kind of paradox. Either we are successful in stopping climate change or preventing significant climate change, in which case we've got very little change in the climate to worry about, but we've made very dramatic changes to our economy, or vice versa, effectively global collapse. While having made no change to the economy. 2050 net zero is quite a dramatic change. I mean, we'll probably need to, for net zero, be capturing carbon that will lead to maybe 20-30% forest cover across the country. We're at 11% now. So a very dramatic that. A large decrease in the amount of driving public transport, because we need to, energy is key. As we move over to renewables, we have less energy available to us. Public transport and active transport is key to making that a realistic life, as is deep retrofitting of all houses. But then we have to work out things like, what are those houses going to be made of? Concrete, wood, and large-scale dramatic change in agriculture. And this, to be honest, is going to be the politics of the next 2 decades.
Next month, as you both well know, world leaders will be gathering in Glasgow for COP26. And if that meeting is a failure and the world does not succeed in agreeing on cutting emissions or keeping the global temperature increase below 1.5 degrees, what is the worst case global scenario? And then on a local level, how different might our own daily life be right here in Ireland?
Okay, you can predict a set of changes anywhere from very little, but most likely all the way to global collapse. It's very difficult from an individual weather forecast to identify when that happens. you can look at the at a graph and see the isobars, and you don't see people being rescued from helicopters from houses. A lot of it comes down to how resilient our society is. If it got above about 5 degrees, it's hard to, you know, it is basically impossible not to see global collapse. Whether that is the outcome, it's hard to imagine. Similarly, in Ireland, we've had people discuss that Ireland is a very favorable place if such a thing were to happen. But, you know, we don't make our own shovels. If the world was to collapse around us, Ireland doesn't get that much better off. The weather might be slightly better, but, you know, if you're dependent on food, if you're dependent on all of your trappings of civilization, you know, it's hard to say it's a nice day outside with the weather.
I wouldn't be as fatalistic or as dramatic maybe as Alistair was in some of his projections. You know, Ireland has pretty much a Goldilocks climate as it is. You know, it's not too hot, not too cold, not too wet or too dry. And by 2050, certainly, it won't be that different. It'll be a little bit wetter. The wet days will be wetter, there'll be more dry days. But it will still be, you know, a temperate maritime North Atlantic climate. The same kind of plants we grow now will grow then. You know, maybe the growing season will be a bit different. But the big changes are going to be at the extremes. So these droughts that will test the resilience of our water infrastructure and the extra floods that will, you know, test other things. So there will be challenges, but there always were. And people have survived worse wars and famines and, you know, biblical plagues in the past. And I don't see this as being any worse.
Although I guess the offset of that, and this is a different conversation for a different day, but is climate refugees and the huge numbers of people that will see a country like Ireland and say, well, I'm going to go there because they have it okay.
I would agree with Enda basically about the Irish climate. This is my point, which is the things that will affect Ireland dramatically are the global changes. If food collapses globally, then being in Ireland doesn't really help. And it is the climate refugees. It is the hydrology of, you know, water supplies coming from for the Indian subcontinent. It's black wave events hitting southern Europe, etc. These are the things that cause global catastrophe that we worry about.
So I guess what's key here is it's not thinking on a national, but thinking on an international basis, that it's not just about us Irish on this island, it's us humans on this planet.
Indeed. I mean, we have a national remit because we need to understand exactly what we need to do in Ireland. And that's important for the EPA. That's important for the national government to understand. But, you know, the larger scale challenge doesn't change. You know, it is an international problem for us to deal with.
As climate scientists, as experts in this field, how do you feel about the climate crisis? I mean, the saying ignorance is bliss does spring to mind. Is it hard knowing what you know about the changes that are happening and still witnessing so many people and leaders turning a blind eye?
I would say that knowledge is not a burden. I would say, on the contrary, that ignorance is, on balance, a more dangerous thing. And people are much more inclined to make mistakes out of ignorance than malice. So, you know, if we're feeling sick and we go to the doctor and we get a diagnosis, I think most of us will want to know if we have cancer. We don't want to cover it up because you won't be able to cover it up forever. So, no, definitely we're better off knowing the truth. And our whole work is to find out the facts. What I find is the most difficult thing about our work is trying to get confidence in it. I mean, we don't have, you know, Greta Thunberg and all these school kids going out on strike for action to stop emitting these greenhouse gases on a false premise. So it's nice to know that the underlying science is robust. And similarly, we don't want governments going, you know, reorganizing the whole basis of our economy from oil and gas and fossil fuels into some other form of energy, you know, on the basis of a false premise as well. So my worry is not to be crying wolf, to make sure that we have a solid, rational, scientific basis for what we say. And after all these years, I'm pretty sure that we do, because IPCC has been asking this question now for at least 30 years. You know, what will happen if humans keep emitting carbon dioxide? And the climate modelers of the world keep running these simulations, and the models get better over time, but they keep giving the same answer, that more CO2 in the atmosphere has a warming effect. And, you know, the theory is relatively simple. The observational evidence is starting to support it now, and all the experimental evidence is supporting it as well. So there's a very strong case that, you know, human activities are causing the climate change. And so human decisions can either accelerate it or halt it or maybe reverse it to some extent. What I want to know is that I'm right. The hardest thing is to be sure. And as a scientist, you really got to be skeptical. You never really 100% trust your answer. You're checking everything, and it gets very tedious. But at this point, so much repetitive work has been done to confirm the basic science that I think we can be confident that the science is right now.
My take is that it's frustrating knowing what we've known and seeing the lack of movement on it. I mean, we're coming up to 30 years since the Rio Declaration, you know, when all the world's leaders effectively stood up on our podium and declared that climate is an emergency.
Let's face it, there has been some criticism of the United States, but I must tell you, we come to Rio proud of what we have accomplished and committed to extending the record on American leadership on the environment.
We cannot be complacent unless the agreements reached here are accompanied by real commitments to significant change.
The world is our garden, and together we must cultivate it. This week at Rio, we have made a start.
By the time that they did that in 1992, most of those world leaders, even in Ireland, had not just a second, but a third opinion by separate groups of independent scientists nationally. So the confidence on that science is pretty robust. The lack of movement is incredibly frustrating, particularly when you know the levels of danger that are potential.
Are you optimistic about our ability, us, the general public, as humans, to do what needs to be done to prevent the global collapse you described, the very worst scenario predicted by climate modelling?
We can do it, yes. The challenge is timing. The time to do something about going over a cliff is not when there's air underneath you. You have to do it long before you reach the cliff edge. And that's the big problem, is that climate is a bit of a juggernaut. It's taken 150 years, 200 years for us to get the climate moving the direction it is and warming. And it takes a lot of effort to stop it. And we need to do so now. So the timing is the thing that worries me. But I think we can.
And is there anything you want to add there?
Well, in answer to your question, I'm inclined to think of what I see when I walk around near where I live. I see bits of furniture tipped into the bog. I see fast food wrappers thrown out of cars into the ditches. So it's very hard to see how people to do that are going to, you know, take responsible action to counteract climate change. Mm. But then, you know, for everybody who throws out their beer can out of the car, there's another bunch of people coming along picking it up. The Tesco approach will only take us so far. The little bit helps will only take us so far. What's really needed to make an impact on the climate issue is national scale or international scale action. So that will take a lot of carrots and sticks to be introduced by the government into form of taxes or subsidies or even mandates. And I get the impression that some big companies, especially like Bord Pneumona comes to mind, is getting out ahead of the curve on this issue. And the governments, they're starting to take it more seriously, and partly because their voters are taking it seriously. You know, I'm reminded too of what Winston Churchill supposedly said about the Americans, that they always end up doing the right thing, but only after they've tried everything else first. Something similar is possibly going to happen with this climate issue.
Alistair Nenda, thank you so much for your time. That's all for today. You can find articles and other work by Irish Times journalists on the climate crisis in the lead up to COP26 on irishtimes.com. In the news, we'll be back on Friday.